For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best. Located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch. Here on JoeBucksFan.com, the divisional round is upon us. And I like the name, by the way. I know there have been people who have said we need a better name for this particular round of the playoffs. You got Wild Card Weekend, Championship Sunday, the Super Bowl. And you kind of have, oh, the divisional round. What is that? I like it. And that's where the Bucks are for the first time in a long, first time since the Super Bowl season, because the other two times they've made the playoffs since then, they were out on Wild Card Weekend. So the Bucks are going to the Superdome. They're going to try and beat the Saints after failing in that endeavor the first two times this season. But those don't matter now. The Bucks win this game. Nobody says, oh, well, you lost two out of three. They say, you are going to the NFC Championship game. And that is the whole entire reason that we're all so excited. So we got a lot to get to on the show, as you could imagine. I want to talk a little bit about the game on Saturday with the Redskins, Washington. But that's gone now, no matter how you felt about it, no matter what you thought of it. Survive and advance, win, have a next game. That's all that matters right now, and the Bucks have done that. Only the fifth time, by the way, in 45 seasons of Buccaneer football that they have won a playoff game, whether it was on Wild Card Weekend or whether they had a bye and went straight to the division. Just won a playoff game in some way or fashion five times in 45 seasons. That's 1-9. So it's special. And Sunday's going to be special. And I had a great time Saturday watching the game with some friends. We're going to do the same thing all the way through as long as this thing lasts, whatever it is. But, you know, looking at this game, and we'll break down some of the numbers, you know, just historically, obviously you've got the whole angle of having been swept by the Saints in two games in the regular season. There's precedent for that. We'll talk about it. But we all, you don't need me to tell you this, we all feel this way. I think these two teams feel a lot more evenly matched now than at any point so far, even knowing the Bucks have lost to them twice. And there's a reason why the number, I think, is what, three and a half on this game? It's moved around a little bit, but it's not much. I mean, it's basically a home line, and even it may be a little more than that because home field advantage is not being given a full 3 points these days. And that was starting even back before COVID. For whatever reason, it's been diminishing. Certainly this year, it's diminished even more. So, you know, most people feel like these are two evenly matched teams. All the numbers, if you look at the point differentials and all that, it points to two evenly matched teams. If the Bucks had simply won one of those two games and kept all other results the same, they would have been the champions of the NFC South. But no matter, they've got their game with the Saints. It's in New Orleans. Let's go. The Free Stretch is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where, like I always tell you, no matter how you want to buy a car or even think about buying a car or look at a car, they'll accommodate you. So in this time of COVID, you know, if you don't want to go over there, you don't have to. They've got a great website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Check out all the inventory, pre-owned, new, used, whatever you want. Take a look. You want to test drive something. You can't just click pictures on the internet. You got to stand next to it. You got to sit in there. They'll bring it to your house. Just tell them. With, I think, a 90-mile radius of the place, they'll take it to you. You can test drive it. If you end up buying it, same thing. They'll deliver it right to your door, no problem, your office, wherever. But if you want to go to the lot and see everything for yourself, do that. A mile north of Raymond James Stadium, Dale Mabry Highway, where they've always been serving this community for almost 60 years now. And no matter which way you buy a car, you'll get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty. You can bring that car back in if there's engine trouble 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, whatever it is, as long as you still own the car, they're going to take care of you. You're covered at the service center. 1 year, free service, the oil changes and stuff, just bring it in, and you get 10 years of roadside assistance on that. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Again, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, or go see them a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry in Tampa. So, first thing you're probably all thinking, this is the first thing I want to know, so I want seeking out the information, but you've got a team, and the Bucks have done this one other time before. In fact, this is only the third time in their history they've played a division opponent in a playoff game, a team they already played two times before. Both of the other two instances happened in 1997 when they took on the Lions in the wild card round after being a wild card. Remember, there was only three divisions back then. The Packers won the Central but the Bucks were the best wild card and thus got the number four slot, hosted the number five seed Lions. So three NFC Central teams made the playoffs that year, and they beat the Lions in the final game ever at Tampa Stadium. To this day, one of the most emotional sports experiences I've ever had. Then the next week, same season, next week they went to Green Bay, who had beaten them twice in the regular season, and they lost to them again, 21-7. Green Bay went on to lose in the Super Bowl that year to the John Elway-led Denver Broncos. But point is, if you go back over the years in the NFL where division teams play each other two times, since the 1970 merger, there have been 21 instances where a team swept another team in the regular season and then they played for a third time in the playoffs. 17 of those times, they hosted that team, which you'd expect, the team that swept a division rival probably finished ahead of them in the division. But there were four times where the team that got swept hosted. Either way, we'll focus on situations that match this one. 21 previous times, in 17 of them, the team that swept hosted the playoff game. And in those 17 games, the team that won the first two games is 12-5 in the third game. Now, some people might think, oh, you always hear the, you know, cliches like, oh, it's really hard to beat a team three times. It's actually not that hard to beat a team three times if you've already beaten them twice. You know, just beating a team three times from scratch is hard. But if you've got a 2-0 lead from the regular season, you've got a, you know, basically a two-thirds chance of winning that third regular season game, which to me make, or third game in the playoffs, I should say, which to me makes perfect sense. I mean, there's a reason usually teams win a game twice against another team. It's because they're probably at least a little bit better. So 12-5 is the record, or I should say, in terms of the Bucks' perspective, teams in the Bucks' position historically are 5-12, which is fine. I mean, you don't want to hear something crazy like, you know, they're 1-16 or 0-70. So yeah, 5-12. It certainly can be done. It certainly has been done. It's not that big of a deal. Here's a little bit more perspective, though, and this is actually more helpful to the Bucks. The average point spread in those 17 games where a team swept another team and then hosted them again in the playoffs, the average point spread in those games was 5.8 points. So you're factoring in a lot of games where the sweeping team was a heavy favorite, whereas the Bucks in this game are only three-point underdogs, and so that narrows things up. Here's the weird part. This is where it gets a little weird. You know, the Saints beat the Bucks 34-23 in the first regular season meeting, the first game of the season, and then they beat them 38-3 in that Sunday Night Football debacle we all remember from what was a month and a half ago, I guess. So that's 46 combined points that the Bucks lost to the Saints by. The other three games they lost, besides those two, the Bucks lost by a combined 7 points. So here's something funny. You know, the Saints won those two games by an average of 23 points. There were three teams out of those 17 I mentioned in the Bucks' position where the sweeping team averaged at least a 17-point margin of victory in those two wins in the regular season. All three of those times, the team that was 0-2 won the third game. I don't know what that, I mean, to me that just probably is an outlier. I would think it's just statistical noise. I don't know if there's anything to it. But the more a team won by in the regular season in the two sweeps, the two games, the less likely they were to win the third game. Now, you could say, oh, hey, that's a great sign for the Bucks. You could say, no way that stat goes to 4-0. That's going to have to regress to the mean. I don't think any of it matters at all, personally. I just know this. These two teams are not that far apart. And certainly the Bucks, looking at what they've been able to do in the past month and in the playoff game, none of them were against teams with winning records, obviously, including the playoff game. But they have won 5 games in a row, which they would tie a franchise record if they won on Sunday because the franchise record is 6. That was all in the 1999 season when the Bucks went to the NFC Championship. But here's what they're going to have to do. Look back at that Washington game the other night. And it was okay because, you know, it's Washington. Their offense isn't that good to begin with. Although Heinicke wasn't bad. But what did the Bucks do to help Heinicke out? They didn't even disrupt him even a little bit. I mean, the pass rush was non-existent. And that's a problem. If you look at the game, if you look at the PFF grades for the game, I mean, the secondary did a good job. Carlton Davis graded out real well. And overall, I mean, it's not like Washington lit them up or something. But man, the defensive front was not good. And there was absolutely no pressure. And if you do that with the Saints this week, and we all know how well Drew Brees gets the ball out quickly anyway. But when you just let him sit back there, I mean, and look, if you look at the two quarterbacks in this game, you got Tom Brady, average depth of target is 9.8 yards. That leads the entire NFL. He throws it deeper on average than anybody else. Drew Brees is the exact opposite. He is the lowest average depth of target at 6.7 yards. And this is what goes back to, well, one, the pass rush, but two, the type of coverage the Bucs choose to play. And we know what they like to do, and it ain't roll up their coverage, but here was an interesting stat. Jenna Lane tweeted this earlier in the week. She covers the Bucs for ESPN. Drew Brees' completion percentage against off coverage, where the DBs are both, you know, 5, 10 yards back, whatever it is 74.6%. When both corners are rolled up, and again, he likes to throw short, you know, when you roll them up like that, it makes that harder. When they're rolled up, his completion percentage drops to 57.6%. Which I'm sure Todd Bowles, I mean, look, I always say, these coaches, this is their job. They have forgotten more about football in the last few hours than I'll ever know in my entire life. And so whenever I question them, I always like to point that out. But still, you know, I know Todd Bowles knows this, but like, I'm pretty sure we'll probably see the Bucs come out there and have their guys 6, 7, 8 yards off the receivers. And hey, fine, you know, again, y'all know what you're doing. So go for it. It will help to have Devin White back, led the team with 140 tackles and also 9 sacks. And he is fresh and ready to go. Again, could have played last week, had that game been on Sunday, but it being on Saturday was just outside the quarantine window. So hey, you know, I trust them to figure it out, but the pass rush has not been where it needs to be, not just this past weekend in the wild card round, but really for several weeks now. And it's not been that big of a deal. The Bucs have been able to get wins anyway against lesser teams, but they will need to have some sort of pressure against Drew Brees and the Saints. And it, you know, if they do, they're going to have a chance to be successful. Now, on the other side, the offensive line, I thought, did a fantastic job on Saturday night in Washington. If you remember back to, you know, not just the week of the game, but the weeks leading up to the game, what was everybody saying? Well, you know, you want that 5 seed for the Bucs. You want to be able to get that NFC East team. It's a good matchup. It's the easiest path. But on the other hand, I don't know, that Washington front seven against an immobile Tom Brady might be a bad recipe. I think I said it. A lot of people said it. And first of all, Tom Brady had the highest grade of any quarterback had against that Washington defense all season long. And the offensive line was outstanding. Couple of sacks, and you know, of course, Kappa got hurt, and they put in Ted Larson, and Larson gave up a couple of sacks, although one of them was a miscommunication, it looked like to me, which will happen when you have a guy who's not getting first-team reps all of a sudden thrust in there. But, you know, he got beat on another one, and Aaron Stinney's going to fill in for Kappa this week because Kappa does have the fractured ankle. He ain't coming back. But overall, I mean, Tristan Wirfs allowed one total pressure. Chase Young, you didn't hear his name called very much. I don't remember what was his stat line, like 1 or 2 tackles. I mean, no, you know, like the offensive line was really, really good. And it was something that we were all worried about, saying, oh, man, it could be a bad matchup with their defense and the way that their front seven is so ferocious. Chase Young, blah, blah, blah. Didn't pan out that way. Offense did a good job and did enough, although they settled for field goals too often. Luckily, they were able to overcome that. Chris Godwin had a few drops, didn't have a great game, but still made a few plays, and Mike Evans made some plays. Of course, Antonio Brown figured big. Brate did a nice job, and they had Gronkowski. I mean, it was just a good all-around offensive effort. And again, Tom Brady, a 90.8 PFF grade. He was the highest-rated Buccaneer in that game, according to Pro Football Focus, on either side of the ball. No quarterback this season had registered above an 80 for a game rating against Washington until Brady went over 90 in that one. So they're going to need another big game out of him. And I'll tell you one thing, like looking at this stat, kind of, you know, this is based on a sample size of a whole season. Doesn't mean it'll come out in the wash in one game, but it could. The Bucs this season set what appears to be an all-time record, not just for this season, but for the history of the NFL since they've recorded such things. for pass interference penalties drawn. They've looked back in the databases, and they've got an official penalties database that only goes back a little over 10 years. But they went through like game sheets and stuff going back to the 80s, and they've never been able to find a team that drew that many PI penalties, 24 that the Bucs drew. So that was a big, big plus this year. And a lot of that goes to their downfield passing game. Maybe some of that's Brady's ability to draw those penalties or the receiver's ability to draw those penalties. I'm not sure. But the Saints, on the flip side, led the NFL in pass interference penalties against. They had 19 times they were called for pass interference, and they were tied for third, 10 times called for defensive holding. So that adds up to 29 times in 16 games this year. They had some sort of PI/defensive holding call go against them. And when you combine that with what the Bucs were able to do, you know, maybe there's something there. The Bucs can definitely get yards that way. And one other big thing I think in this game, if you look at the first two Bucs-Saints games, and not that what happened in those two games is going to dictate anything that happened in this one, but first of all, the second one, the one here in Tampa, the Sunday night disaster, the Bucs were down 21-0, it felt like, before you could even get the popcorn bag open. And they ended up abandoning the run game. They only ran it 5 times for 8 yards, set a modern-day NFL record for the fewest times rushing the football. And actually, it's probably an all-time NFL record, not just modern-day. But the field position was another one. Like, the field position, in the two games the Bucs played against the Saints, they had 24 drives. Only one of those began past the 25. A lot of them began at the 25. That's because the Saints scored so many damn touchdowns that, you know, they'd kick off for the touchback and start the Bucs at the 25. But it wasn't just that, because again, only one was past the 25. The average starting field position of the Bucs against the Saints in two games has been their own 20. Meanwhile, the Saints have been all over the field. And so if the Bucs can basically just avoid doing things really poorly, because they did things really poorly in the first two games. And the first time, they got down 24-7, then they did come back and make a game of it, but it wasn't as close as the final score indicated, 34-23. And then the second game was just an out-and-out ass-kicking, which we all saw. So, I mean, even despite all that, like, they did themselves absolutely no favors. If they can just get into a game where they play fairly well, they've got a good chance to win on Sunday. And that doesn't mean they're going to win. I mean, who knows? But they've got a good chance to do it. It would be a great feeling, obviously, to slay a giant like this that has been such a thorn in the Bucs' side. And this isn't like the Eagles-type thing in 2002 where the Bucs had lost in the playoffs to them 2 years in a row and then lost to them that regular season. It doesn't feel that way. And honestly, I know some people, I see it on my Twitter feed, some people are, oh, the Saints, I hate the Saints, it would be so sweet. I mean, it'd be sweet because it's a win in the playoffs that gets you to the NFC Championship game. I've never felt a ton of ill will for the Saints. And pro sports are different than college sports. I've never really felt the ways about other pro teams that I do about, like, the Gators' rivals, like Georgia or Florida State or something. They're just other teams. I know, again, there's some history with the Bucs and Saints and things like that, but, you know, this is looking like, and it's not officially been said yet, but it's presumed this is the final season for Drew Brees. Win or lose, this could be his final game in the Superdome. And I don't have anything against Drew Brees personally, other than, you know, he's given the Bucs fits over the years. But that'd be pretty cool after everything for the Bucs, especially after the regular season sweep. The Bucs go in there and they end it. You know, that'd be maybe a little extra something. But you don't need a little extra in the play. You want to win because you get to go on to the next round and play the NFC Championship game. And I'm not even giving up hope that the Rams could maybe somehow figure out a way to beat the Packers and we get to have one more game at Raymond James Stadium. Of course, there is definitely one more game at Raymond James Stadium no matter what. We know that to be the Super Bowl. So, you know, the Bucs could get to that too, even if the Rams don't win. But either way, you know, it's going to take a really solid effort on both sides of the ball. I think what the Bucs can learn from, even though the Bears' offense is atrocious, and what a goddamn embarrassment the Bears were on offense this past week. How about getting the ball? You're trailing on the road in a playoff game, and you get the ball with 2 minutes to go, and you've got like a couple timeouts, and just running the clock. Like, they just wanted to get to the locker room. Like, you could tell right then and there. But defensively, and Bruce Arians said this earlier in the week, there's some things the Bears did defensively, and they had a lot of success against the Saints. And, it, you know, the Saints pulled away late when that game was already well out of hand. And, you know, the defense just kind of spit the bit after the offense had let them down so much. But the Bears defense put some things on film that the Bucs can definitely benefit from, and they showed that the Saints offense can be slowed down. So hopefully that's something the Bucs are able to learn from. As far as injuries, I'm doing this show on Thursday afternoon. It's right at noon right now, so it just turned from morning to afternoon. So the Bucs, try to check the Twitter feeds here. As far as injuries go for their practice, yesterday when they had practice, Ronald Jones still wasn't in there. He's got the quad thing, but it looks like everybody else was doing pretty okay. Besides, of course, we know Cap is out. And okay, here it is. Greg Allman tweeting that Ronald Jones back at Bucks practice today. Hard to read how much he's doing, but a small step as he returns from quad injury. He says Godwin seemed fine out there today, and that was posted as of 11:30 a.m. on Thursday. So by the time you hear this, we may know more. But injuries don't appear to be a huge factor. Of course, getting Devin White back is big, and he's got fresh legs, having been off for a few weeks. Said he was working out at home and things like that. You can keep checking JoeBucksFan.com for any injury updates as we get closer to the game, but it doesn't look like it'll be too big of a factor on either side. So, oh, there'll be some fans. I forgot about that. There'll be 3,000 fans, which seems low. I mean, I would think with a 70,000-seat place, if you wanted to do even 10%, you could do 7,000. But they had 3,000 for their game against the Bears last week. There'll be 3,000 more. But even that, I'm happy to hear. And Bruce Arians even said, yeah, we just want something. He said when they were there in week one, it being really empty, it was just eerie and weird. And same thing with Washington last week. And, you know, obviously we all want everything to be completely filled. It makes for great atmosphere. It makes for great television. But it's amazing what even a few fans, like just, like the whole no fans thing is, it sucks. It really sucks. Like if you have even, like what the Bills had, what was it, 6,000? And, you know, that's a real hungry fan base there because it's been so long for them. But even that just gave it more of a feel. Like it's almost like a binary state. It's not how many fans there are. It's, are there any fans? If like the difference between 3,000 and zero is even bigger than the difference between like 10,000 and 3,000, just because you have somebody. And it gives it a little more atmosphere. It makes it feel a little more fun. You know, I know they pipe some fake noise through the broadcast, but you can hear the real fans when they're over there. So there'll be 3,000 fans in attendance. And, you know, we'll see how all that goes. But I'm glad to hear there'll be something. So just going to be stud on stud on Sunday night. Let's see what happens. I wanted to talk about, well, first of all, the other three playoff games. Speaking of the Bills, I'm really excited to see the Ravens-Bills game. And I think Chiefs-Browns could be decent, too. I like the Chiefs in that one. I wouldn't go so far as to take the Browns. But I think there's some real, I mean, wouldn't it be fun to have a Bills-Browns AFC Championship game where you're guaranteed somebody's getting off of a really, really long hook? Although I don't know if that'll necessarily happen. I still think the Chiefs are tough to beat for the Browns, but that would be fun. I don't care much about Rams-Packers outside of just what the Bucs' interests are, although the Packers aren't losing that game. They didn't come this far. And Aaron Rodgers, by the way, would still be looking for his first ever Super Bowl if not for a tiebreaker over the Bucs in 2010. But they ain't get all this way, get the number one seed, have a home playoff game to go one and done. I just cannot see it. And I hope I'm wrong, because I'd love to see the Rams spring that upset. But if the Bucs do beat the Saints this weekend, I would plan on them having to go to Lambeau, which is fine. You know, that's what you're going to have to do this time of year. And if the Saints somehow, if the Rams somehow pull it off, well, then all the better. And we'll worry about that bridge when we are about to cross it. But as for the Bucs and Saints, that's the main concern. And looking at the rest of the NFL, some news broke a little while ago that I wanted to just talk about real quick, because Urban Meyer appears to be finalizing a deal to become the head coach of the Jags. And Herb, you know, y'all know me, I'm a Gator fan. And so some of my favorite memories of being a Gator fan are the period of time when Urban Meyer was the head coach at the University of Florida. I remember I graduated in 2002. In fact, my final season at UF was Steve Spurrier's final season at UF. And then we had the 3 years of Ron Zook. Then I met what would become my wife, Chelsea, while she was in dental school at the University of Florida. And for me, that was so great because, you know, we did the long distance thing for a while, her living in Gainesville and me living in Tampa. And it was like going back to college again, because I'd go up there on the weekends. Whenever the Gators had a home football game, I'd be up there for the weekend, or she'd come to Tampa. But whenever the Gators were playing, we'd be up there. And this coincided with Urban Meyer taking over the job in 2005. 2005 is when I met her. And two national championships in 2006 and 2008. And some of the most awesome memories I have. Now, there's a lot of things you can say about Urban Meyer. And I always find it funny because a lot of Gator fans, or at least in my circle of friends that I know, are like, oh, I hate that guy. What a scumbag. And they really don't like Urban Meyer, which is amazing. I mean, I don't know how you could say that as a Gator fan. And I'm not saying you have to approve of everything, and certainly some of the off-field things that took place that we didn't know at the time, but that we know now that were going on under his leadership of the program are not savory things. I get it. But how, like, you want to give the championships back? If you want to give the championships back, fair enough. Say what you want to say. But you can't keep the championships and run your mouth about Urban Meyer at the same time. Like I said, I mean, I remember how much, I mean, 2006, going out, me and my wife went out to Arizona for the championship game. We went to those SEC championships in Atlanta, went to road games at Auburn, at LSU, at Tennessee. I mean, we were just, it was great. It was so much fun. And the Gators were as dominant as they'd ever been, especially in 2008. And you can say what you want about Urban Meyer. Like, you can say a lot of things, okay? But as a straight-up football coach, and this goes for any level, okay? So this isn't just a college thing. He is one of the best football coaches, I firmly believe, on the face of the planet. And if you have a chance to hire him, I think you should do it. The Jags, I think, I mean, they've got Trevor Lawrence. And this is what Herb's walking into. It's Trevor Lawrence. They actually have four picks in the top 46 or whatever it is, including the number one overall, which is going to be Trevor Lawrence. They've got like $100 million in cap space. They've got some young talent already there. I mean, it's a really good situation to walk into. It's a place he's familiar with, you know, having been in Gainesville, just right down the road from Jacksonville. And, you know, I think the most, like, people talk about, you know, Herb's a lunatic when it comes to losing. Like, he's one of these guys that if he loses one game, he just rips himself apart. Like, that was part of the reason why he didn't last at UF. And eventually at Ohio State, same thing. Like, he had health issues, and some people don't believe the extent of those health issues, but whatever. Point is, like, it really, really affects him when he loses a game. So some people are saying, oh, imagine the NFL where he might lose more in the first season than he did in his entire time at Ohio State. You know, first of all, the vibe is different in the NFL. You know, he's not expected to win a Super Bowl this first season in Jacksonville. But second of all, you know, I think it could be something that helps him, because when you lose one game in college, you can get maybe one, but when you lose one, and definitely when you lose two, your whole season's shot. If you're one of those programs that plays for conference and national championships every year, you know, some programs go 8-4 and they're like, hell, great, 8-4, good year. No, if you're, you know, Ohio State, if you're, you know, obviously Alabama, what Florida and Florida State used to be, and Florida's kind of trying to get back to that now, a Clemson, you know, one loss, and it's like, that's a big deal. Two losses, it's like someone died. You know, it's like, oh my God, our whole season's done. So I think in the NFL, where you can be, you know, hey, we're 8-5 at this point in our season, that's okay. You know, like, you're still, your eye's still on the prize, you're still content. I think Herb can let these losses roll off a little bit more easily than he could in college, because of the way the NFL is structured, whereas in college, every loss, like, took, literally, it seemed like it was taking years off of his life. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe it'll be even worse. A lot of my Gator friends have been saying, hey, I don't know what's going to happen one way or the other, but I guarantee you whatever it is will be 3 years tops and this whole thing is over. Hey, maybe. But if I'm the Jags, I do it. And I totally understand why they would want to do this. And any team in a situation where they need a head coach and he's available and interested, I don't blame them one second for pulling the trigger. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch. And people say, oh, well, you know, college coaches never do well in the NFL. If you look at the previous college coaches, including Saban, who have tried to do it, they didn't have as much success. I don't think there's anything special about being a college coach moving to the NFL. I think if you look at the success rate of NFL coaches, period, most NFL coaches aren't successful. There are 32 teams. They only give out one Super Bowl trophy every year, only two conference champions, and even division champions are only one quarter of the league. So, I mean, people say, oh, college coaches haven't shown they can do it. The percentage rate of success for college coaches moving into the NFL, I don't think it's much different than any new head coach in the NFL. I mean, most of these guys coach a year or two or three and they wash out, or they get fired and they get another job and they get fired from that too. I mean, you know, how many coaches, you can count on one hand how many coaches you think of that are like, oh yeah, this guy's been a complete and total success, you know? And even the ones that win, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. He just got let go by the Eagles. I don't think it's because he's a bad coach. I think there's philosophical differences in what they want to do at the quarterback position and other places. And by the way, he's a guy somebody should look at because I think Doug Peterson's a good coach. But my point is, like, it's not, college coaches can't hack it in the NFL. Most coaches can't hack it in the NFL. The percentages are against you. It's a vicious ecosystem. It eats most people up. So it's not a negative coming from college. I mean, especially with a track record like his, you know, I would give him a decent chance to succeed. I'm very interested to see how it goes. It'll make the league more interesting, but that's for other years. Right now, we're not worried about that. Right now, we're worried about divisional round weekend, Sunday at 6:40 p.m. And let me tell you something right now, folks. Like I told you, I don't know what y'all did for the Redskins game. That was late. 8:15 is late. I mean, even me and my buddies, we got together. But by the second half, I was like, oh, this, you know, 6:40 is the perfect start time. Just like the Super Bowl. You know, it's always over by 9:30, 10 o'clock. Monday's MLK Day, right? So even better because you don't have to worry about any of the, we got school. My kids don't have school the next day. So for them, for sure, I'm not going to have to worry about anything as far as staying up late. I'll let them stay up for this. And people who, you know, people are working from home and stuff anyway a lot right now. But anybody who may have the day off from work for MLK Day, all the better. So it all sets up very well. Get together, have some friends over, do whatever it is you're going to do. You know, no matter what happens, we've only got at most three football games left for the Bucs this year, and I hope it is three, but we could have just this one to go. And either way, folks, it's been a long time, okay? It's been 19 years since the Bucs have been one of the final eight teams standing. They're trying to get to be one of the final four. We're going to find out on Sunday night how all that goes. So thank you for joining us. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform here on JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place for Bucks coverage anywhere on the internet and anywhere, period. Keep it here all throughout the weekend as we get ready and closer to game time for more info. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, our sponsor, and thanks to all of you. I am Bobby Fenton. That is the Free Stretch Divisional Round Edition. As we get set for the four games this weekend, and wherever you are, have some fun, get together with friends, be safe. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. I'll talk to you next week. Go Bucks.